All right, Potties, you're making a difference because of you and the people that listen to the show on Way FM terrestrially, if you want to call it that. We have sent over 47,000 meals to the people that are struggling in Ukraine after they've been displaced because of the war. That is pretty stinking amazing. And I love the fact that you're getting to partner with us in ministry right now in a very tangible way. You're not only helping feed people, but you're also making sure that they get the gospel as well. So thank you so much. But sadly, as the war stretches on, the need is still there and becoming greater. Here's the great news, though. It only takes 25 cents to send one meal. So for about the cost of a dinner out for you and your family, you could make sure that a couple hundred meals are sent to Ukrainian refugee families. Can you imagine what a relief that is for moms who have no idea how they're going to feed their kids from day to day? This is truly ministering to the orphans and widows, like the Bible says in James. And we'd love to keep that going and send another 25,000 meals to Ukraine in just the next couple weeks. I'm in. I'll never ask you to do something I'm not willing to do myself. So if you want to help out, just text the word WALLY to 91999. And again, thank you so much for even considering this. And let's make a difference. Let's do something huge today. Again, text the word WALLY to 91999. Welcome to the WALLY Show After Castle, stuff we did not get to during the course of the show today. Betty Rock is back. Yay! And the crowd went nuts.
Yeah.
Not, she's not even going nuts. She's like, doesn't want to be here today.
Well, if there, I always say this, and I need to remember to not order you a coffee.
I know. It's so good. I love the coffee.
I can't, because you're already at an 11 or a 12 on your own. You don't need
caffeine. I could drink this giant coffee every day and not gain 300 pounds, I would do it. Because it does make me feel better. It's weird. Like, count a field thing. Like, I'm like, there's nothing that could amp me up or anything like that. But coffee actually does. It does make me go a little faster. It's weird. I thought I was above effects of things like that. But then I'm starting to find out that I'm not. I'm not special. That coffee does affect me in a way that it does make me a little bit hyper and things like that.
No. Just a little bit hyper.
It really does. Yeah, surprisingly. Let's get into some of these things. Gavin, you are young, but let's see how well your public school education has served you, okay?
All right.
If I was to say the name John Hinckley Jr., who is that?
No idea. Should I?
Yes.
John Hinckley
Jr. Oh, Betty Rock.
He's a basketball player.
No. You too?
Did he create bubblegum?
No.
Man. Don't act all high and mighty. You got Alaska and Hawaii mixed up one time.
On the map close to each other, which is wrong. It's amazing how big Alaska is. Like, Texas fits in it with a lot more space. But anyway, John Hinckley Jr. was the man who shot President Reagan. Back in the day. Remember that? And he shot James Brady and two other people in that failed assassination attempt. But do you know that was 40 years ago? Like, I can't believe it was that long ago. Yeah, I can't believe it was that long because I was living in that time.
Oh, Reagan.
Reagan. And so it's interesting, though, like 40 years after this, he said he's filled with remorse over his actions, but he's ready to move on with his life. He's 67 now, and he spoke with Nightline, and he apologized to the victims and their families. Yeah, it's a TV show. And so he said, I'm truly sorry. I really am. I'm not sure if they can forgive me, and I probably wouldn't even blame them. But apparently, like, he served his time and is out. Like, that's what I didn't know. I just figured he was done for life.
Yeah, but I would think if he tried to assassinate the president, that would be a life sentence.
I think, if I remember right, too, he had this weird, like, by reason of insanity thing. Like, he thought Jodie Foster was telling him to do it, or he was trying to impress Jodie Foster, the actress. It got really, really weird. But yeah, that's crazy that he's out. And some of Reagan, the people close to Reagan, are reluctant to accept Hinckley's olive branch, if you will. But he said he's committed to proving to the world that he's a changed and better man. And he wants to support laws that would prohibit others with mental health issues from getting access to guns.
Did he ever say why he did what he did?
I think it was the defense, the thing I was just talking about with Jodie Foster.
I wish that, you know, I was watching.
I could be wrong, though.
I was watching a Dateline episode where it was about these two kids that were planning a school shooting, and then it didn't pan out, and and other things happened. Anyway, one ended up in jail, and he talked to Keith Morrison, and he said that he regretted everything. He wished that wishes that he could go back and change it all, and he wouldn't do it.
Right.
But he was a young kid. He was like 16, 17 and made this decision. But I wish that those people could like go face to face with these kids, like this one in Chicago that just recently had a, it's like all these, it's these guys that just feel like they aren't seen. So negative publicity is better than nothing. Yeah. And so why not just murder people?
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's broken people doing broken things, you know, ultimately. And it is sad, like the younger kids and the violence that comes with them, that you're right, when you're 16, you make life-altering decisions, and you're not prepared mentally to deal with a lot of things at that age, you know? And I mean, that's, I mean, honestly, I mean, you get mad at me if you want to, but like, that's the thing about letting eight-year-olds decide their gender that's lunacy, you know? Like, you don't know anything at 8 years old.
Yeah,
you know?
I was like, saw an interview or something where you have parents who say, oh, my 10-year-old is like really smart. Right. It's like, he's smart for a 10-year-old, but he's not smart in the way that the world works per se. And then even though they're, you know, you might have a really, you know, genius child, making decisions about that kind of stuff is just so beyond someone with like a singular digit to their age.
Well, Einstein was a genius, but then he couldn't balance a checkbook. Like he was really good at something, you know, but he wasn't great at other things. And like, I mean, that's people, like, even a smart kid might be really great at math or music. You're like, wow. But then they might not have all these other faculties about them as well. But I think that this is the hardest part. This is one of the hardest parts about being a believer is forgiveness. So take Hinckley, for example. Okay, so Hinckley does this horrible thing. He serves his time, you know, and what we say is your time for your crime. He serves that and then is out and says, I'm different now and I'm sorry. This is the hard part of being a believer. You have to accept that you have to accept that people can change, or else what are we doing? Like God can change people. If we don't believe that, then, you know, what hope is there? You know, and the thing about this is too, the other part is you have to believe that God was able to forgive you. And maybe that helps people figure this out. You know, sometimes when you're really filled with unforgiveness, is that God forgave you for all the stuff you've done and that I've done and that we constantly do. And we make mistakes over and over and over again, but God's always there to forgive us. And I think sometimes if we put it in that context, it might make forgiving somebody a little bit easier. It doesn't absolve them from their crime. He still had to pay his price. Mm-hmm. But then if someone comes out, until they prove you otherwise, otherwise, it's on us to extend forgiveness, to extend grace to people that we don't think deserve it. And that is really hard, you know, you know, and especially too, like if it's somebody that didn't try to kill the president, but it's somebody in your own life that hurt you, wounded you deeply, and they come to you and say, man, I messed up, I'm really sorry. You can either hold that bitterness against them for the rest of your life, or, and it only eats you up, or you can extend forgiveness, you know, and take the chance. There's always a risk with forgiveness. And I think a lot, this is what holds a lot of people back. If I forgive and they truly haven't changed, then I'm getting fooled again. I'm getting hurt again. I'm getting drug into this again. And I'm the idiot, you know, kind of thing. I think that that's a sub-context that we wrestle through for forgiveness. And I think that's, you have to let that go. You have to go, look, I'm going to forgive you. And what you do with that forgiveness is not in my hands anymore. But I've let it go. I've let you go. And now this thing no longer holds me. And when you do that, there is such freedom in that. And if you can continue to live in that place of a forgiveness state for people, you're probably going to end up a lot happier in life. Because I know I hold things.
I was going to ask you, is this something you've put into practice lately?
I forgive you. Yes.
For what?
Everything you've ever done to me.
Oh,
and it's made me really a better person. I'm happier today.
Sure.
No, it's something that I struggle through. You know,
and I think everybody does. It's human nature.
I mean, when I do it and I do it right, you would think you get it right once and you're like, oh, that does feel good. Why can't I do that with everything? But then there are certain people that have hurt you in a different way and you're like, I can't. I just can't yet, you know?
Because it feels like you're giving them a pass, or that what they did does doesn't matter.
Exactly. And nothing could be further from the truth. It doesn't absolve him, mm-hmm. but it feels like it does mm-hmm. sometimes. And that's kind of a messy thing for people. But anyway, so there you go. A little bit of that conversation there. I know this is kind of getting into Lisa Lee's territory like you have, Rock, but I just thought it was interesting that American Idol winner, his name is Caleb Johnson. He won season 13. I don't even know what season they're on. There was a big chunk up till now that I stopped watching American Idol. I just lost interest in it. And so there's a litany of people that have won that I have no idea who they are. But he was like a Rock guy, you know, kind of thing. And so it's been 8 years, I guess, 9 years since he was crowned as the winner. But he says the song that he had to perform, As Long As You Love Me, he absolutely hated. He said it was the worst piece of garbage song. But what happens when you win, they write this single for you and you have to sing it, record it, and then sing it on the Idol tour. And that becomes your song. And he was like, this is absolute garbage. And they're like, sorry, dude, it's part of the contract. You got to sing it. And then you get away from it, and then you can become your own person, but it's that stepping stone. Mm-hmm. Look at the Colton Dixons of the world, the Mandisas, the Carrie Underwoods, the Daughtrys. All of these people had to go through a version of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, eventually people forget that you were on American Idol. Like, very rarely do I say Colton Dixon from American Idol, mm-hmm. you know, unless there's something that I'm referencing from that, or Mandisa from American Idol. But there's a kind of a price you have to pay. But here's the thing. I wanted to play a little bit of this, okay, to see how bad the song is. And see if you agree. But there's a comparison here, okay? So the song that he had to sing was As Long As You Love Me. It was written by Justin Hawkins. Do you know Justin Hawkins from the band The Darkness? Oh. I believe in a thing called love.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
You know that song? Okay, so here's the deal. I want to play some comparisons and see if you see, oh, this guy absolutely wrote this song. You know, and so here's Caleb Johnson, the intro and the verse. To the song he had to sing.
We were looking for love in all the same places, infected with the same disease, in a room full of guys with handsome faces. You couldn't find a moment to see. I always wanted you to notice me, to notice me.
And, like, this is so not this guy's style. But here's The Darkness and Justin Hawkins kind of doing their thing. And see if you see a similarity. Oh. So you hear it, right?
Yeah.
Can't explain all the feelings that you're making me feel. My heart's in overdrive and you're behind the steering.
When this song came out, I was working in radio in Atlanta, and we actually played that song because it was kind of the band came out and it was kind of a spoof, like throwback to the 80s, mm-hmm. kind of a gimmick band, mm-hmm. you know?
And but for some reason, it caught on.
It did, and it's crazy this guy's still writing songs. So here's the hook from Caleb Johnson, his song.
But as long as you love me.
In the darkness. Yeah, it's so. You don't like this, do you, Rod?
No.
Not even as a joke.
No. I like the dark. I like that.
You like the darkness better?
I think that sounds good. It's like catchy, no. It's fun. But I can understand Caleb Johnson's feel towards that because. That doesn't sound natural to
him.
No,
it sounds like he's singing somebody else's song.
Yeah, it sounds forced, and it sounds like he actually was singing someone else's song.
Do we know what Chris had to say about it when he heard that this Caleb guy didn't like it?
Oh, Justin Hawkins, the guy
Justin,
who wrote it?
Yeah.
No, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's a huge insult.
Mm. I thought the same thing.
It stinks.
Because if you're
him,
you're like, hey, I had a band and we had a number one song, or probably a top 10 song, you know, but that was their only hit.
Yeah, they were one hit wonder.
Yeah, that was it. I did start to wonder the other day, I was coming into work and I was wondering about different bands. You know how we did Where Are They Now? Mm-hmm. There's part of me that wants to get a hold of Oz Fox from Stryper. He's the guitar player. Because they're still doing Stryper albums. And Michael Sweet, the singer, went on to do his own solo thing. But I'm curious how Oz Fox makes a living. Like, there couldn't have been that much money that he's living on from post-Stryper days.
Do you really want to know the answer to that question?
I do. Well, I really
wouldn't
do.
It just leave you depressed and sad?
Maybe, yeah.
Or you find out he's a realtor.
Yeah.
Or he sells used cars.
He's Grubhubbing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of want to know. Because there's a couple guys like that. There was the singer for Whiteheart that is a realtor. Matt Dolly became a big realtor from Super Chick. John Schlitt from Petra went on to design custom cabinetry. He's a cabinet maker, just like Jesus. Nothing wrong with that. So I'd be interested to know, like, some of these other people, like, how did you eke out a living after? Because you didn't make a ton of money in the Christian world anyway, you know? So, yeah, maybe I'll have to do that. I think I know someone that knows Oz.
That's up to you, but I don't want to deal with the aftermath of you crying.
I'm just sad.
And saying, I'm just my sad. Generation. Yes.
All right, Oz, you can move in with me. It's okay.
I'm a guest room.
Yeah, it's fine. Come live with me. Lady Rock, what do you got?
Keanu Reeves, yeah. We all knew he was a great guy, but recently he was seen at an airport, and a little kid came up to him and asked him for his autograph, and of course he gave it to him. But then he actually took the time to answer all the questions that this young kid had to ask him, like, why were you in London? Do you live in New York? Why are you in New York? And people that were walking by, you know, of course they noticed it was Keanu Reeves, and they said that he took the time to answer every single question, and he even had questions for the kid about his own trip.
That's cool.
Nice.
So I think it's just interesting to see that he is a good guy at heart. I mean, we know that he took care of his sister when she was going through a cancer battle, and maybe his mom, I can't remember, but he's just done a lot of good.
It's interesting, like, when people who don't know you come up and they talk to you, and they're so kind, like, they want to tell you how much they love what you do and what it means to them, but then there's sometimes this really awkward thing where they're like, oh my gosh, like, it happens to us, like, the people come up like, oh my gosh, I just love your show, thank you so much for what you do, and then there's this weird awkward thing where you just, like, stare at each other, because you're like, oh, thank you, I really appreciate it, thanks for getting what we do with the show, that's awesome, and then there's this weird thing where no one knows how to exit the conversation, and that's where I always... Like, I don't like dead air, so then I always ask a million questions, and then I wonder if sometimes I'm keeping the interaction going longer than it needs to.
Oh, you do, definitely. Yeah, because, I mean, like, there was one, like, this last time we had somebody come in, a family that came in, you were asking all the questions, which was fine, but they never, I don't think they can think fast enough as you, because you're constantly thinking, what's the next thing I'm going to say? You may not even be listening to their answer. You're just trying to keep the conversation going. And so that's why I asked them, I said, do y'all have any questions for us?
I remember that.
Ended up that they did.
Right.
But I just want to give them that opportunity, because I think, I understand we don't like dead air, but sometimes you got to embrace it to give them a minute to even think about.
I'm just going to ice people from now on. I'm just going to stare at them. Just dead eyes.
Hey. So you're here.
I'll tell you.
What do you talk about?
I love when... this isn't a segue to say that we're celebrities, but I love when celebrities do cool things for their fan, and it doesn't take a lot, you know? Like, I will forever be indebted to this Broadway guy, Ramin Karimloo, who treated my daughter with such kindness when he did not have to, and came, and actually the guy, the stage manager, Manny, like, I remember all these people, like, she wanted to meet this guy so bad, that's why we went there, and he didn't do the stage door greetings like they normally do, and we waited on our last day, took all of our suitcases back to the theater, and wanted to meet him before we flew out, and Manny was like, he's not here, I'm so sorry, and he goes, he is coming back at like 1 o'clock for this, they have to do a rehearsal thing, and he's like, I'll try to bring him out, but I can't guarantee it. And this guy, Manny, did. He made it happen, and then Ramin came out, and it was just, my daughter's face lit up, and it was so cool. And then what was really amazing is we went back 2 years later to see another show, and Ramin was there, and we come up, and we walk up, and I'm like, hey, dude, how are you? And he goes, Nashville, how are you doing, man? Like, he remembered us.
Cool.
Like, and it was like, that's the kind of thing that people don't forget, and it matters to them. And the thing is, like, you can treat people that well, even not being a celebrity, you know, by just having just the slightest care for them as people, you know, in your job, remembering their names, remembering who they are, doing something kind for them. And it makes a huge difference. It makes a huge imprint on people.
Question.
Yeah.
You said that I feel like you've been going 20 miles an hour. So I'm going to take a little bitty.
Breath.
A rabbit trail.
Yeah.
You said you respect Manny and Ramin.
Yes.
What if you turned on the news tomorrow?
Yeah.
And you saw them and it said that they were involved in a
horrible dog crime.
Fight
oh, dog
club.
Fighting ring. Oh, yeah. I would say. Well, I'd first make a donation to a dog kennel rescue thing, just because you have to. And then
I'm a dog owner. If you want to,
right? And then I would support them and be like, they're different. They're changed. They messed up.
What if they haven't publicly made
said
an apology?
That they did? Yeah, I would then look into dog fighting. You know, like, maybe there's some maybe there's some upsides here. Because there's, I would say they were framed. I would say they were framed because they are too good of people. There's no way they would dogfight.
What if they say this dog?
I did it. I would say they're being coerced. There's no way that this is could possibly be true. There's somebody off camera that's like
they're blackmailing.
Yes,
them.
Exactly. There's no way. I would refuse to believe anything bad about either of them.
Says a lot.
Yeah.
Want to go to birthdays?
I would love to. Let's go.
All right. We don't have any birthdays.
No, that was easy.
But we do have a question from Jess. Jess would like to know, if you were going to be stranded on an island with a celebrity, who would you choose to be stuck with?
The dog fighting Ramin Caramelou. boy, I want someone that I could have a conversation with. My default answer, like before he slapped Chris Rock, was always Will Smith, because I thought it would be fun. But if I, God help me, if I ever said anything bad about Jada and I can't escape him on this island, that would be dangerous.
Just constantly be looking to slap you.
Yeah. Like, so I don't think that, maybe Jeff Probst. I really like Jeff Probst, but then he lets everyone run over him now because he wants to be so politically correct on Survivor.
Who that is.
So host of Survivor.
Oh.
Because he would know a thing or two about surviving after watching it all that. Mm. No, Mike Rowe. I would pick Mike Rowe.
No, that was my answer.
I know, I would pick him so you couldn't have him.
He would choose me over you.
I don't know.
Maybe both of you could be on the island with Mike
Rowe.
No,
that'd be great. I don't want to be on the same island as Wally.
Yeah.
My luck, he'd find a coffee stand and he'd be going 20 miles an hour running around here and there.
What about you, Gavin?
I would choose a Marvel character.
Okay.
Actor. Jeez. Probably
Thor. Could you say somebody
real? Yeah, I was going to say Thor's actor, Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, he's great, yeah.
Because he's cool, he's funny. I would personally want to take the time on the island to have him train me to get Thor's body.
Good idea.
To get in shape.
Good idea.
Naturally.
Can I ask a question? This is going to sound horrible coming from me. No. Am I ever getting rescued? Am I going to be here the rest of my life?
Let's say you are going to be rescued, but it's going to take 3 years.
Yeah, all right, she's a big person.
Then like Mike Rowe or somebody like that. If I'm never being rescued, I'm picking a chick.
Which would be your wife.
Well, no, but she. You said it had to be a celebrity.
What could be a celebrity in your eyes?
No, that's not how this...
That's a great answer. Yeah, it's not how it works, but that's a great answer.
Yeah.
Explain that one to Marty.
Nope, rather not. Doesn't listen to the Aftercast. All right, so I think with that is going to do it. Everyone that knows her is going to be emailing her. Don't email her, Giselle.
As always, thanks for being a potty.